This is 16.9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. We're all about digital signage and have been since 2006. We cover what's interesting now and what will be interesting and important one day soon. And we filter out all the BS. This podcast is a chance to add depth and color to what we do online, and it gives smart people a chance to really talk about their companies and their ideas. You can hear new episodes weekly on your smartphone, tablet, or desktop, free of charge. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful, ready-made, auto-delivered, and auto-updated content for screens. Booze is a complicated thing to buy. All the product categories look pretty much the same, so people revert to price, top-of-mind awareness, or labels and names that just catch their eye. One of the ways to improve that situation is by putting digital right into the aisles of liquor stores, where people poke around trying to figure out what they'll like and what they should buy. A company up in the North Atlantic tech suburbs called Cellar is rolling out BEV TV displays in stores with the aim of helping consumers make more informed choices about buying wine, beer, and liquor, and maybe influencing what they end up buying. The company got its start in retail hardware, but has transitioned fully into software and content, building up a massive library of curated information about booze that's tied to universal price codes. They make that interactive content available on commercial-grade tablets they install on their nickel at eye level in participating stores. I talk in this podcast with company president Bruce Van Zyl about BEV TV's experiences to date and its plans to have 1,000 units running by this summer. Bruce, thanks for joining me. We haven't met before. I think the first thing that would be useful is to clear the fog a little bit for me as to what BEV TV is, what Cellar is, and how that fits with OnQ Technologies, because there's kind of a few brands here that I'm looking at.
Absolutely. So OnQ is a retail technology company that was started in 2003. And we've been doing various technology in different stores, everything from price checkers to different hardware manufacturing services to custom devices. And then when the iPad came out in about 2008, the company started moving into more software development until about 2011, 2012, moved completely into software space and left the manufacturing business. And then around 2015, we rebranded the company as Cellar. And Cellar is a platform that's helping retailers just help sell better with Cellar is our tagline. And we're helping market products online and market products in store and making it just as easy to use and as simple as possible. And so while we have a lot of these stores who happen to be particularly in the beverage space, we actually just recently last year launched BEV TV, which is a network of tablets that basically lets you the brands kind of push content, educational content, promotional content to these devices when they're not in use. So it benefits shoppers, benefits retailers, and the brands now have a new marketing channel.
Now, I became aware of BEV TV because you joined the DPAA, and I was a little bit curious about that because it would strike me as your tribe, so to speak, would be going direct to the different liquor manufacturers, the liquor brands like Diageo and so on, as opposed to going through media planners. So what's the thinking behind joining the DPAA?
We're new to the advertising space, looking for just membership kind of accreditation, something to help give some credibility. We met them through some mutual contacts and seemed like a great fit. And they've just helped to introduce us to some other key partners that have really helped move our business forward.
Okay. Is everything that you're doing, well, let's back up a little bit. What's the footprint right now of BEV TV?
Right now, we have about 300 tablets sold in to about 27 different states, and we're quickly growing. We should be around about 1,000 installed tablets by September, October this year.
And is that the primary feature set is a tablet, from what I've seen at eye level, in the liquor aisles?
Yeah, that's correct. It's a 10-inch tablet that is interactive, so it's showing this as kind of a TV content that it just kind of runs continuously. But there's also a way that the retailer is also featuring their store logo, and there's a little button where they can tap to view specials, and then we take the shopper into kind of an interactive experience where they can look up products. There's a scanner where they can scan a UPC on any product, look up details, which is pretty particularly helpful in the beverage space where it's a very confusing industry for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And who owns that content? Is that something you're developing for them, or is it something the stores have?
So this is something that we generate automatically for the retailers. One of the biggest problems we saw in the last few years is that content generation is, of course, one of the obstacles you have to overcome in this space. And so we found a way to build an existing database of products. And so we have about 165,000 products, ranges from different aisles, beer, wine, spirits. We're also in health, other aisles, but particularly in beer, wine, spirits. And then matching all that content up to the UPC, which was sounded like an easy task, but then has taken years to kind of perfect to make sure that every bit of content has a UPC attached. So when a store joins, they basically list the products they want to promote, giving us a UPC and a price, and then we're able to match that up with our database and then dynamically generate content to help promote those particular products in their store.
Okay. And that database, is that something that you can buy? Is there another company that's kind of building all that?
So that's all our data. We've built that from scratch.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So it's been a long journey, but we have a team of 25 product editors who are full time. That's their job, just checking, curating, cleaning up our database.
They don't get to drink the products?
They don't get to drink the product, but
Damn.
We do have our lobby has about 1,000 bottles of of liquor and I hear most of them are still full. So
where's your lobby? I can help.
Absolutely.
Being at the eye level, I've seen other programs like this in supermarkets and mass merchandise and so on. And I've always found it kind of interesting because when I talk to the companies that are doing it, they say the take-up rate, the sales rate from when they promote particular products on these things is mind-wobblingly good. What's been your experience with, let's say you have a particular California Cabernet that's running on these eye level screens? Is it driving sales?
Absolutely. We've done different metrics. Of course, there's so many factors when you're looking for a stat like that. But, you know, we've seen somewhere, you know, it could be anywhere from 10 to 15% kind of lift. And I want to qualify that when we're promoting products, we're also promoting it online. It's on their website. There's a few other places where these products are being seen. We've kind of found a sweet spot. You know, promoting less than 100 products is obviously better. The fewer products you promote, the more impressions you're going to get and all that. But it depends on, of course, the size of the store. We have some stores who want to put 600 featured products. And so a lot of this is just, you know, educating the retailer and kind of finding that sweet spot of what's the optimal amount to promote. And then, of course, trying to see the lift in sales from that.
Okay. And how many do you put into a typical store, or is there a typical?
We'll start with at least three. We'd like to go in with one beer, one wine, and one spirit.
Okay.
And then we do multiples of three. So we have 3, 6, 9, and 12 is typically what you'll see. We do have some stores with 12 or 15 tablets, but typically it'll be between 9 and 12.
Is that tied to the footprint?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got some stores that are 15,000 square feet. You know, we've got some smaller stores that are, you know, 3,000-4,000 square feet. So it really is, we're trying to have them every 6 to 10 feet inside the store. And just give, because, you know, at only 10 inches, you have to have a lot of them to kind of make an impression throughout the store. So it's part of the experience.
Mm-hmm. And so if you've got a lot of different promotions running, because that's what the retailer wants, the frequency of the individual spots drops, right? That's the issue?
That's correct. Yeah. And, you know, if you've got 600 products and they're each on screen for 6 seconds, it's going to take a while for that product to come around again.
Right.
If you've got it, you know, 10 products, you're going to see it a few times while you're walking down that aisle.
So how do you get around that?
Mostly it's been around educating the retailer, kind of working with best practices. They have I provide a dashboard for them to help manage what products they're promoting, what products they want to just have listed on the tablet, and then certain products they don't want to show up at all, that may be specialty products, things like that. So we help maintain that. We've got recommended sizes based on, you know, if you've got 12,000 SKUs in your store, here's kind of recommended best practices on that, and just a lot of education, I think.
Is there a certain type of content that seems to work better? Is static better than video, or vice versa?
Oh, video is by far the most effective. We're seeing really video and then anything educational, whereas saying, you know, here's a whiskey, buy this whiskey, it's the best whiskey, showing someone how you can you know, something about that where it's a little more educational. Here's something about how this was made. Here's a, something interesting about, and trying to do that in a short time frame. Of course, everybody's attention span these days is shorter than
ever.
About
6 seconds.
And so trying to get 6 seconds, exactly. So we're trying to get something really interesting very quickly and then kind of grab their attention. And then things like cocktail recipe videos, kind of someone making a cocktail recipe, something like that is particularly, we see a lot of interest on those kinds of, that kind of content.
Right. Now, you're using a tablet and you mentioned iPads off the start. I'm curious how that went, because what I've seen of the images suggests those aren't iPads. You've gone
They're
to something
not.
That's more commercial grade.
Exactly. When we were about 2 years ago, we were revamping our entire application process and figuring out kind of what technology stack we wanted to use. And we were so focused on the software, we really didn't want to worry about the hardware. And so we made a quick decision early on to just go with an iPad in a case. And we had found a great partner to build these cases for us. And it was great when we just needed to focus on the software. But as soon as we started coming back to getting ready to scale, we never got more than less than 100 iPads out in the field, and then have gone through the painful process of replacing all of those. So while it was a good partnership, they're just obviously not designed to be used 24/7. We had batteries exploding, not exploding, that sounds dramatic, but they were popping out and bulging out of the back and all kinds of random issues that when you run them 24/7, they're not designed that way.
Yep. So you moved to a commercial device, and is it like an Android tablet, or it almost looks like a Chrome?
It is. Yeah, it's running, it's an Android tablet that's running our own application to manage the software, and something we've built. And the complex part of what we do is that we have to have this scanner integration. And so we have a high-speed 2D scanner attached to the bottom of the device, and basically lets you just wave a barcode in front of it, and within 1 to 2 seconds, you're looking at content about that product from our database. So that's kind of the key thing that was the most challenging, to have that on the iPad as well. Mm-hmm. Whereas we moved to commercial grade, it definitely solved that problem for us.
Now, there's this whole segment out there that says if you're going to do anything around consumer engagement, blah, 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 that you have to have a direct handshake with their smartphone so that they can do something with their smartphone with this screen or take things away and so on. Mm-hmm. I'm a little skeptical of that in a lot of circumstances. What's been your experience? Are you doing anything around, marrying the two devices?
We've kept it, simplicity is key when you're doing new technology. I think when people try and go in with something that's very complicated, it's often difficult to understand for the shopper and the retailer and even the brands who are typically on more of the cutting edge of this, and the advertisers. Keeping it simple, we came up with an option very early on, which, well, back up when we used to do these tablets, we used to manufacture them ourselves 5 years ago. We actually had a printer, like a receipt printer, that was attached to the device. And so the concept of walking away with the content was, we've had that in our system for a long time. And so we needed a digital way to do that. So we came up with a very simple option. If you're looking at a cocktail recipe or any kind of content, you can just enter your phone number and it'll just text you all that information. And so you walk away with a text or an email. And so that's been the most effective, again, the very low cost, very simple solution, but it gets the job done.
Yeah, sure. You don't have to turn on Bluetooth. You don't have to find a QR code scanner in the blizzard of apps you have.
Yeah, and we are mostly millennials working at our company, and so we constantly are kind of questioning ourselves and saying, is this something we would actually want to use or not? And that's where QR codes. I don't think anyone on our team can remember when they've used a QR code last. Downloading an app for a particular retailer, especially somebody like a beverage store, where it's a little bit more. You're not exactly going there every, multiple times a week. You're going maybe once every 2 weeks, possibly, or once a week at the most. But, we just didn't feel like we would do that for ourselves. We wouldn't download an app just for this one retailer. And I know there are companies making apps for, beverage stores. And that's something we've just actually stayed away from, because you're in the aisle. You're there to buy a product. We have a saying around the office that nobody goes down a beverage aisle to browse. You're there to buy something. You are not going to see the latest product, the latest wine that's now available. You're going to pick up something for a party, you're going, you know, buy something as a gift, you have a dinner you need to, you know, pick something up for. So you're there to get something. So really all we're doing is just helping you get the right product sooner, and then obviously helping make that experience as seamless as possible.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
I'm sure the app companies would dearly love to buy your database, but why would you do that?
We make it available via an API. It's one of our products.
Really?
We actually do work with a number of app developers on that space. Yeah.
But you sell it to them.
Of course we do.
Yeah. Well, sometimes there's open APIs and open source stuff, but I wouldn't understand why you would do that.
Yeah. And there are, you know, there are services out there. I think the problem with something as when you're dealing with quality products like wines and spirits and stuff, you've got, you know, if you're buying a $100 bottle of whiskey or some of these finer products, the quality of that database is everything. Mm-hmm. And that's something we've had to bring in-house and in order to control. And so that's why we've developed that. We've listed it as the largest beverage database that's also attached to UPCs for that reason, because from what we can find, there's nothing else out there that has that same database with all the items that we have and also linking it to the UPC.
Right. The other thing that I've seen in liquor stores, I certainly see it promoted at trade shows, is this idea of having some sort of a sensor associated with feature bottles so that you lift the bottle up and up pops something on the screen that's related specifically to that product. Do you see that as viable, or does it just simply take up too much space?
It's like the first version of every technology. I think there's some really cool, we like to consider the bleeding edge of technology. It's actually kind of painful to get it working the first time. But I think as people adopt more of that becomes smaller, I think that will be a viable option. It's really what we're focused on, and I think where the industry is going, is to make this shopping experience as seamless as possible. When you're shopping online, you've got so much data that's being stored about you, about the store, about the products you're interested in. That shopping experience can be very seamless. If you're looking at something like Amazon, or, you know, you're being suggested products, you're seeing reviews of those products. So you're getting all this data that you don't have when you go into a brick and mortar store. And I think they're trying to get some hybrid technologies, and it's kind of one of our missions here is to try and integrate some of that online technology, bring it back into the aisle, but keep it so simple that a simple integration with a POS system, and then this tool is now on and working. Mm-hmm. So you have to do it on scale. You can't just do it for a particular brand or particular set of products. You have to be able to do it across all products, especially if you're going to do something like that in the beverage space.
Right.
It's just so much variety.
Whose nickel is it to put these things in? Is it the retailer, or is it your company?
So majority of it is being financed by us. And what we do is we offer subscription packages for the retailer to upgrade this different sets. So we, depending on how many tablets you have, obviously costs a little bit more for the retailers, and we give them different features. So there's the coveted POS integration in this space is where all the kind of magic happens. And that's sort of on our top tier. It means all the pricing, all your products get synced, you know, every couple hours with our system. And that just makes it extremely useful. If they put an aisle on sale from their POS system, it automatically starts promoting that on the tablets. Okay. Things like that, where that kind of level of automation. So that's one of our most popular features and one of our most popular plans because of that.
So it'll work pretty nicely just on the base level, but it's going to be a little clunky if you're changing pricing frequently.
Yeah, we limit the amount of products you can put in on the base level. Mm-hmm. We don't let you put in your own content. So you can't put, you know, if you want to create a graphic or a video that promotes a wine tasting next Thursday, you would have to be on one of the premium plans to do something like that.
Right. Would you use larger displays, like 22-inch displays, if you could?
Yeah, we've played in specific installs. We've done everything from 10, 15, and 22-inch models. That just depends on the store, and it really comes down to how much real estate you're giving up on the shelf. Mm-hmm. It's all about that shelf space and keeping that to a minimum. So that's something that we found this 10-inch device that has kind of become our main go-to device. It you can actually see the labels of a wine bottle above it if you place it right in front of a bottle, and it doesn't take up room below the right. For the next product below. So it's just this perfect sweet spot, and we just end up installing more of those. But we have done kind of greeters and other type technology in the front of the store with larger displays, experimenting with that for sure.
Is there a delicate balance of how many of these you can put in? I know you talked about groups of three earlier. If you had the opportunity and the financial clout and everything to double up the numbers of displays you'd have in a particular store, would you do that, or is there a risk of saturation?
I think that we would absolutely put in as many as possible. I think what would happen then is we would go to different levels of targeting for the product. So mm-hmm. rather than walking in and seeing kind of all products across all tablets, we would see much more specific. Instead of just doing spirits, you may see a scotch or a whiskey being promoted in that, you know, scotch and whiskey aisle. Mm-hmm. You may see very specific targeted ads start to happen. So we're absolutely exploring that and being interested in pursuing that kind of level of targeting. So especially for the advertisers to push content, not only to that store and to that shopper, but to that aisle where there's someone else possibly looking to purchase their competitor's product.
Now, I'm in Canada. We have provincially run liquor stores here versus private enterprise. And in the U.S. where you're based, it's kind of all over the place. Most are private, but there are
state-run,
yeah. That I assume that gets complicated. And how do you deal with going into stores that aren't just privately run chains?
Great question. So we're located in Atlanta, Georgia. And Georgia, you can only legally own two stores that sell spirits, can be under kind of one owner. So for that reason, we've not done a lot of stores in Georgia because there's no large chains inside of Georgia. So we've typically gone outside of Georgia to look for those larger chains. But that has been an issue just really with when it comes to scalability. If you can go into one store and then have them replicate that model to all of their stores, it's obviously much, much easier. So we've started with the larger chains for that mm-hmm. reason. Mm-hmm. We are actually in a number of stores in Vancouver and throughout Canada. So we've dealt with that in different scenarios as well.
Is it tougher because there are, I don't live in British Columbia, but I suspect there is a government thumb on any liquor sales activities that's maybe a little heavier than it would be in pretty much any U.S. state?
Absolutely, yeah. That's something, it's state to state, so it's extremely complex, but there are all kinds of legal requirements when you're promoting alcohol in a store. Who can promote it? You know, how are they displayed? You know, how you position that product. That's been one of the challenges we've had to overcome the last few years, is how to do that. And then also, once you do figure it out for one state, how do you then adjust that and modify it to different states for different laws? But absolutely, that is one of the challenges. I think if we had to redo this product in a different industry, I don't think we would pick beverage. Although it sounds fun and we have the lobby full with 1,000 bottles here, mm-hmm. it definitely creates its own unique challenges. We have to creative solutions to come get around those.
I guess on the flip side, though, it's retail industry that's less at risk than perhaps many others, because you know, the bottles are big and they're fragile and expensive and everything else, versus commodity consumer packaged goods products that, you know, you can ship anywhere, you know, in 2 hours.
Absolutely. Yeah, it definitely has its own set of unique advantages as well. It's also a very renewable product. You're buying it this week. You possibly will need it again in a week or two when you've, you know,
possibly
place it. Possibly. Possibly. Or tomorrow. Who knows?
First name basis. What would you go into next then, or what else are you into? Because I've certainly seen, as I mentioned earlier, mass merch where you've got like body lotion and shampoo kinds of products that are using these shelf edge displays and seeing some real action.
Right. We like to think that we're helping shoppers pick out products in kind of complex, what we can define as complex products, mm-hmm. helping making that purchase decision easy around when there's a lot of complexity. So wine naturally is complex. You've got food pairings, there's different levels of sophistication in how you pick the right wine. The next thing I think would be somewhere in the health space, where we've got things like vitamins and supplements. If anyone stood in front of the health aisle in a CVS or a Walgreens, possibly, there's just an amazing amount of options there, and they all have the same ingredients, but all different prices. So how do you pick the right product? Something like that, I think, is, and we've already started delving into that a little bit, but that's going to be our next mission here.
Yeah, that's very, very complicated, but it's an interesting industry because they're, as one guy from GNC told me, their margins are exotic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cost them 5 cents to make a pill and they sell it for a buck and a half or more.
Absolutely.
So your company, is it privately held? Are you VC funded? How does that all work?
Yeah, we're VC funded. And have been for a number of years when it was acquired, I think back in 2010. I joined the company in end of 2015. Mm-hmm. And so I've been here for just a little over 2 years.
And how many people now?
When we started, we were a team of 7 or 8, I believe. We're now pushing, getting almost 30. Mm. So we've grown quite a bit.
So the investors are hoping you scale out way beyond 1,000 screens pretty quickly.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
What are the barriers to doing that?
Barriers would be, I think, just retailers adopting the technology at scale. We do have a number of much larger retailers we are working with in small pilot stores. So when you're going in for 6 to 9 tablets, you don't need that many stores to hit 1,000. Screens. It scales quickly. If you've got 200 plus stores in your brand, that's something that we're looking for, that kind of adoption. So we're talking to a number of retailers that are in that scale, so that we kind of help guarantee that this will get over 1,000 this year. It's very simple to install in terms of how we do it. We basically cover the cost and the associated with the install. So we actually come out, install the tablets in the store. There's really no effort on the retailer side other than just allowing us to put them in the display in the store, and then of course they're able to upgrade and start to use the services as they need to. Mm-hmm. The location. So we've tried to make it try to remove as many of those obstacles as possible. Of course, yeah. I think as it scales, the tracking the lift of sales, tracking the actual how does this move the needle from a sales standpoint is going to be a key driver for us to really make this a no-brainer. Everybody wants kind of more screens, kind of high-tech the store, add, more targeted advertising, things like that. But I think once you start to push the boundary on actually pushing sales up and seeing that lift, I think that's where we'll see a much faster adoption as well.
Hmm. All right, Bruce, thank you.
Very good. Thanks for having me here.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9 the blog and now the podcasts are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.